genius of Rome expired with Theodosius, the last of the successors of Augustus and Constantine, who appeared in the field at the head of their armies, and whose authority was universally acknowledged throughout the whole extent of the empire. The memory of his virtue still continued, however, to protect the feeble and inexperienced youth of his two sons. After the death of their father, Arcadius and Honorius were saluted by the unanimous consent of mankind as the lawful emperors of the East and of the West, and the oath of fidelity was eagerly taken by every order of the state, the senates of old and new Rome, the clergy, the magistrates, the soldiers, and the people. Arcadius, who then was about 18 years of age, was born in Spain in the humble habitation of a private family, but he received a princely education in the palace of Constantinople, and his inglorious life was spent in that peaceful and splendid seat of royalty, from whence he appeared to reign over the provinces of Thrace, Asia Minor, Syria, and Egypt, from the lower Danube to the confines of Persia and Ethiopia. His younger brother Honorius assumed in the 11th year of his age the nominal government of Italy, Africa, Gaul, Spain, and Britain, and the troops which guarded the frontiers of his kingdom were opposed on one side to the Caledonians, and on the other to the Moors.
But the two youths were most inadequate successors to Theodosius. Arcadius spent much of his time plotting the assassination of the one impressive figure of the period, the military commander Stilicho, to whom Theodosius had entrusted the care of both the Republic and his sons. Of Honorius, Gibbon notes that he passed the slumber of his life a captive in his palace, a stranger in his country, and the patient, almost indifferent spectator of the ruin of the Western Empire.
If the subjects of Rome could be ignorant of their obligations to the great Theodosius, they were too soon convinced how painfully the spirit and abilities of their deceased emperor had supported the frail and mouldering edifice of the Republic. He died in the month of January, and before the end of the winter of the same year, the Gothic nation was in arms. The barbarian auxiliaries erected their independent standard and boldly avowed the hostile designs which they had long cherished in their ferocious minds. Their countrymen, who had been condemned by the conditions of the last treaty to a life of tranquility and labour, deserted their farms at the first sound of the trumpet and eagerly resumed the weapons which they had reluctantly laid down. The barriers of the Danube were thrown open, the savage warriors of Scythia issued from their forests, and the uncommon severity of the winter allowed the poet to remark that they rolled their ponderous wagons over the broad and icy back of the indignant river.
The Goths, led by the bold and artful genius of Alaric, who had sought the leadership of the Roman legions, marched into Greece, taking Athens without a fight. Alaric, king of the Visigoths, threatened the survival of the Republic.
As soon as the Athenians heard the voice of the Gothic herald, they were easily persuaded to deliver the greatest part of their wealth as the ransom of the city of Minerva and its inhabitants. The treaty was ratified by solemn oaths and observed with mutual fidelity. The Gothic prince, with a small and select train, was admitted within the walls. He indulged himself in the refreshment of the bath, accepted a splendid banquet which was provided by the magistrate, and affected to show that he was not ignorant of the manners of civilized nations. But the whole territory of Attica, from the promontory of Sunium to the town of Megara, was blasted by his baleful presence. And if we may use the comparison of a contemporary philosopher, Athens itself resembled the bleeding and empty skin of a slaughtered victim. While the downfall of the barbarians was the topic of popular conversation, an edict was published at Constantinople which declared the promotion of Alaric to the rank of Master General of the Eastern Illyricum. The Roman provincials and the allies who had respected the faith of treaties were justly indignant that the ruin of Greece and Epirus should be so liberally rewarded. The Gothic conqueror was received as a lawful magistrate in the cities.